intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Audio Journal's Young at Heart. The book selections for this hour are designed for elementary and middle grade listeners. This program is supported in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. My name is Lavender, and I'm happy to be with you today. I will continue reading from the book, Return of the Homework Machine, by Dan Gutman. Brenton Damagachi, Grade 6. The website was up just a few minutes when I got an IM from some guy in Ohio who wanted to become a canyonist. He said he had been searching his whole life for something to believe in, and that canyonism was the first thing he'd seen that made sense. He wanted to send us money and everything. It was just sad and pathetic that anyone would take such a thing seriously. But soon the website had hundreds of hits. People are crazy. Police Chief Rebecca Fish. It was round about the end of November, I reckon, when I found a white male runaway wandering in round Grand Canyon Village. About 20 years of age. Said he worshipped the Grand Canyon. The kid kept trying to stand on his head and pray to somebody named Nutnerb. Wasn't making any sense at all. Figured he was high on something. We put him on a bus heading back east. I tell you, we get all kinds of loonies here, so I didn't think much of it. The kid had a backpack filled with Twinkies. Brenton Damagachi, Grade 6. A couple of days after the website went up online, I got another email from that Milner guy. He went on and on about canyonism and what a brilliant idea it was. He wanted to team up or something and promised me there were millions of dollars to be made from canyonism. He wanted to print books, make videos, and sell souvenirs to saps who bought into the idea. I didn't like Milner. I didn't like what he was suggesting we do. I pulled down the website. Maybe I should have changed my email address so he would stop bothering me. Judy Douglas, Grade 6. Richard Milner was the strange man who somehow found out about the homework machine while we were using it. He pestered us for a long time about it. It was almost like stalking. I wanted to call the police on him, but the others talked me out of it. Sam Dawkins, Grade 6. Personally, I thought Milner was harmless. He just wanted to make money. Nothing wrong with that. It's America, right? We all want to get rich or die trying, but the others were so freaked out by the guy, especially Brenton. He was really spooked. Police Chief Rebecca Fish. Day after Thanksgiving, one of our coppers spotted somebody wandering around the canyon near the same spot where them kids chucked the computer. Went down to check it out. And it turned out to be that Damagachi boy. Bright kid, but a little strange, if you ask me. Wouldn't tell me what he was doing down there. But it was late in the day, and the boy didn't have enough water with him. I was afraid he might not be able to get back up before dark, so I brought him out. Every year, a bunch of tourists need to be rescued, but it's usually not the local yokels. I just figured it's kids doing stupid things. Boys will be boys. Judy Douglas, Grade 6. I became very concerned when we heard that Brenton was wandering around the canyon and the police had to rescue him. It's just not like him to be irrational. They say there's a thin line between genius and madness. I was wondering if maybe Brenton was crossing the line. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. All geniuses are a little nuts, right? Brenton once told me that thousands of years ago, an alien spaceship crash-landed in the Grand Canyon. He read about it on the internet, and he really thought it might be true. I figured he was looking for the spaceship. Why else would he be hiking down there with no water at the end of November? Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. Judy was so worried about Brenton that she said we had to have an intervention. Man, I didn't even know what that meant. So we all went over to Snick's house after school. I figured that Brenton just went off the deep end. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. I asked Brenton if he was searching for an alien spaceship, and he said no. He said he was looking for that red light from the homework machine. I couldn't believe it. That stupid light. He was obsessed with it. We all told him to get over it, but that's when Brenton dropped his little bombshell on us. Oh, Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. I felt that I needed to tell them the truth. The reason the homework machine was so powerful was because its CPU was a super chip I bought at a computer flea market in Williams. That chip was what kept the little red light on. The man who sold me the chip in the first place, I finally realized, was that guy, Richard Milner. Oh, Sam Dawkins, grade 6. Brenton told us he was pretty sure that the guy who sold him the computer chip was Milner, and that Milner got it from some gangsters in Japan or someplace. Apparently, Milner didn't have the technical know-how to do anything with the chip himself, so he found a smart kid who did, Brenton. Then he started watching what Brenton did with it. Judy Douglas, grade 6. I didn't quite understand it, but that computer chip was some kind of cutting-edge technology that nobody else in the world had yet. It was super fast, and it could do things normal computer chips couldn't, like work with no source of power. It was probably stolen from the company that developed it. If it fell into the wrong hands, well, who knows what might happen? We all realized at once that we had to find that chip, and we couldn't let anybody know. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. It was starting to get cold out, and soon there would be snow on the ground. So we had to move fast. That night, all of us snuck out of our houses at 2 o'clock in the morning. We had to do it in the dark because that would be the only way we'd be able to see the blinking red light. Snick had a metal detector. The rest of us brought flashlights. It was exciting. We hiked down until we found the spot where the homework machine landed. We spent about an hour down there searching on our hands and knees, but we never found the stupid light. Or the stupid chip. Chapter 4. December. Ronnie Teotwaki. Grade 6. Of course they couldn't find the chip. I had it! As soon as I heard on the news that they catapulted their homework machine into the canyon, I hiked down there to see if I could find it. The police had cleaned up most of the mess, but there were still some pieces scattered around the rocks. When I saw that little red light blinking, I had a hunch that I hit the jackpot. I knew there had to be something special about that computer. You can't take just any old PC and program it to do homework. Even Brenton isn't that smart. The computer had to have some kind of special chip inside it. A super chip. Everybody thinks I'm dumb because I don't do good in school. But I know how to build a computer. I built one from kit when I was 9, and I built one from scratch last year. When I found their chip, I knew I could use it to build my own homework machine, and I wasn't gonna share it with anybody. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. Ronnie and I were in a computer class together back when we were in third grade. It was one of those after-school programs. He had a knack for rewiring circuit boards. I thought that we might become friends because we had this common interest, but we didn't get along, so I stayed away from him. Judy Douglas, grade 6. Brenton was really miserable when we couldn't find the little red light. We didn't know what to do to cheer him up. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. Miller's emails were getting weirder. He started ranting about how technology can be used for both good and bad purposes, like the invention of the airplane, for instance. It can be used to airlift medical supplies to victims of an earthquake, but it can also be used to drop an atomic bomb. He was right, of course. But I was starting to think Milner was crazy. He always ended his emails with the words, "Did you find the chip yet?" Sam Dawkins, grade 6. I knew what would get Brenton's mind off that stupid blinking red light. Shooting up a cool rocket. So I went online and ordered the Estes CC Express. It's a level 2 rocket, and we had to spend a long time putting it together. But this thing could fly 1,760 feet. That's because it's a 2-stage rocket with 2D engines. It is a beautiful thing, 2 feet high, red with a black tip. We shot that baby up after school one day, and it looked like it was never coming down. I thought it might leave the Earth's atmosphere. Mr. Murphy even came out to see the launch. Mr. Murphy, 6th grade teacher. I was impressed. The boys had done an excellent job putting together the rocket. It wasn't one of these quickie cut-and-paste jobs like I have seen some kids build. They were very careful to cut, sand, and attach the fins so the rocket would fly straight. They really got the maximum height out of it. I told them I was proud of them. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. I did some research and discovered that by adding a few chemicals, I could double the power of the engines and double the maximum height of the rocket. Mr. Murphy helped me. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. Mr. Murphy told us we better watch out because rocket people are a lot like boat people. He said that people who are into boats usually start out with a little dingy, not much bigger than a rowboat. And then right away, they want a bigger one with a stronger engine so they can go faster and farther. Soon they outgrow that and they start looking around for something bigger. Once they buy that boat, it starts looking small and they want a bigger one. And the next thing they know, they're sinking their whole life savings into a yacht or whatever. I told Mr. Murphy he was nuts. We were just having some fun with rockets. Judy Douglas, grade 6. We started doing heavy math stuff with decimal and fractions this year. Up until now, math came really easy to me. Addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division gave me no problems at all. But when you have to divide something like 54.369 by 1.731 or convert decimals into fractions, that's hard. I really wished I had the homework machine sometimes to help me. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. So I took Brenton's super chip and cleaned it off really good. It still had the wire attached to that little red light, so I had to be careful with it. The chip had a standard input. I opened my computer up and installed the chip into one of the open slots. Building my own homework machine wasn't as hard as I thought it was gonna be. I had to buy a scanner because my printer can't do that. But once I had them both hooked up, it was easy to train the computer to recognize my handwriting and voice. I programmed the computer to search the internet for just about anything. With all that in place, it was simple to slip a worksheet into the scanner, tell the computer to read the questions, go online to find the answers, and print them out in my handwriting. Brenton isn't the only smart kid in the world. Mr. Murphy, 6th grade teacher. I had been warned about Ronnie. The reports on him said he was a troublemaker. I remember when I walked into the class on the first day of school, all the other kids were sitting very politely with their hands folded. But Ronnie was leaning back in his chair with his feet up on the desk. It wasn't a big deal, but it showed disrespect. He was sending me a signal that he wouldn't meekly submit to a teacher's authority. I must admit that I was a little surprised in December when his homework grades shot up to A's. I didn't think much of it at the time. It never occurred to me that he might be cheating. I just thought he had turned over a new leaf. I believe all kids are good deep down inside. Judy Douglas, grade 6. Mr. Murphy handed back our homework one day. I only got a 96 because I wrote that John Glenn was the first American in space, but actually it was Alan Shepard. A careless mistake, but it was still an A. Anyway, Ronnie was sitting next to me. Usually I didn't pay attention to him because I thought he was just a mean boy who was surely going to end up in jail someday. But I happened to glance to my right just as Mr. Murphy handed Ronnie his paper, and I saw that he got 100. My eyes must have bugged out or something, because Ronnie smirked at me and made some remark about getting a higher grade than I did. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. Ha! Once I had a homework machine of my own, I didn't have to waste my nights doing that crap anymore. I could kick back, watch TV, and play Grand Theft Auto all night. It was great, but the best part about finding that chip was being able to stick it to the smart kids. Judy and Brenton and some of the others thought they were so great because they like school and the teachers all think they're so perfect. I wish I had a picture of Judy's face when she saw that I got a better mark on my homework than she did. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. I was suspicious of Ronnie right away. There's no way a pre-juvenile delinquent like him is gonna go from D's to A's just like that. Brenton and I talked it over. It was Brenton who said that maybe the reason we couldn't find the chip was because Ronnie got to it first, and he used it to build his own homework machine. I didn't believe it at the time. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. The more I worked with the super chip, the more I could see how powerful it was. I mean, the thing wasn't just fast. It could think like a person. It had artificial intelligence. If somebody wanted to, they could use it to hack into government databases. They could steal social security numbers or credit card numbers. Transfer money without people knowing it. It could bring down the internet. Not that I would ever do any of that stuff, of course, but I could if I wanted to. Homework? Who cared about homework? That was the least of it. I could use the chip to do just about anything I wanted, and nobody would ever know. I figured it was gonna be a great new year. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. We had a little Christmas party in our class. Mr. Murphy was telling stories about his years in the space program. At some point, Brenton and Snick went off in the corner whispering to each other. It wasn't like Snick. He's usually the life of the party, cracking jokes and everything. Judy and I went over to see what was up. Snick just looked at us and said, "We think Ronnie found the little red light." And Brenton said, "We've got to get it back." Chapter 5. January. Brenton Damagotchi, grade 6. Over the holidays, I almost stopped checking my email. I dreaded hearing from Milner again. The only good thing, I remember telling myself, was that if Milner kept bothering me, he didn't know where the chip was. If Ronnie had the chip and he teamed up with Milner, there was no telling what they might do with it. Judy Douglas, grade 6. When we returned from vacation, Mr. Murphy asked us to write about our favorite gift we got or gave. Mine was a piano. We got it for the whole family. It was used, but it sounds great. I'm going to take piano lessons soon. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. I got a worm compost bin. It is real cool. They gave you a pound of red earthworms with it. Then you just throw your food scraps in, and the worms eat it and turn it into rich organic compost that you can use in your garden or with your plants. So there's less garbage going into landfills, and you become a part of the circle of life. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. I got this rocket called Excalibur. This is the coolest rocket ever. You can actually mount an egg on the nose cone and shoot it 610 feet up in the air. I really don't know why anybody would want to shoot an egg 610 feet in the air, but it is cool. They call the egg an eggstronaut. Brenton Damagotchi, grade 6. We don't exchange gifts in our family. It should not be necessary to give someone a material object to show that you care for them. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. I got a handheld GPS. You know, one of those global positioning systems. It's sort of like the navigation systems you see in cars, but this one is for hikers. Mine is about the size of a walkie-talkie, and it is amazing. It can pinpoint your exact location anywhere on Earth, give or take 20 feet. You can't get lost. You see yourself as a little blip like on a radar screen, and you can zoom in on any part of the country. It also works as a barometric altimeter, an electronic compass, and you can download topo maps. It's waterproof too. The thing is amazing. Mr. Murphy, sixth grade teacher. Over the holidays, I finally had some time to sit down and read over that old Phoenix Gazette article Judy showed me back in November. Apparently, the Smithsonian Institute sent a man named G.E. Kincaid to explore the Grand Canyon in 1908. He reported that he discovered a mile-long cavern far below the rim. It had tunnels radiating out like the spokes of a wheel with hundreds of rooms inside. The article went on to say that Kincaid found all kinds of artifacts in those tunnels. Swords, copper tools, tiny carved heads, water vessels made from golden cave paintings of animals drawn with charcoal. He found a large statue, an idol, sitting cross-legged with a flower in each hand. The face was Asian, like a Buddha. These people obviously reached a high stage of civilization. And here's the most interesting part. Along with that other stuff, G.E. Kincaid found a crypt with mummies, and it was surrounded by stone tablets with what looked like Egyptian hieroglyphics written on them. So my natural question was, what the heck were ancient Egyptians doing in the Grand Canyon long before Columbus? How did they get there? And what happened to all that stuff that was found? Where is it today? Who's got it? Where can I go to see it? I'll tell you, this article really got my juices flowing. It was hard to sleep that night knowing I was just a few miles away from what could be the most important archaeological discovery in American history. I got up and looked through all my American history books. There wasn't a single word about any treasures hidden inside the Grand Canyon. Where were they? Sam Dawkins, grade 6. Brenton and I decided that Ronnie couldn't be trusted with that computer chip. We had to get it back. Who knew what he might be capable of doing with it? One of us was going to have to break into his house and take it. There was no other way. Judy Douglas, grade 6. I want it on the record that I was just completely against the idea of breaking into Ronnie's house to steal the chip. There were so many reasons. We would probably get caught. We would get into serious trouble. We could get killed. What if Ronnie's mom had a gun or a vicious guard dog or something? It would be on our permanent records. The other kids don't think about this stuff. But if you break the law, it ends up in some database somewhere. It will follow you for the rest of your life. It might prevent you from getting into law school or getting a job 20 years from now. Why risk it? It was simply wrong. You don't go breaking into other people's houses. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. We can't get in trouble if we're honest here, right? Well, then I must admit I thought the idea of breaking into Ronnie's house and stealing the chip sounded exciting. Nothing exciting ever happens around here. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. Judy has a very black and white view of the world, and I don't mean race. To her, everything is either right or wrong, good or bad. But sometimes there's a gray area. In certain situations, breaking the law is the morally correct thing to do. Like if the American colonists had not rebelled against the British and overthrown their government, there would be no United States today. With that chip, Ronnie was capable of doing just about anything. So breaking into his house to take the chip and prevent him from using it for criminal activities was the morally correct thing to do. I thought so anyway. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. We were having a tough time convincing Judy that breaking into Ronnie Teotwaki's house was the right thing to do. Brenton was doodling on a pad of paper and suddenly he says, "You know, I always thought Teotwaki was a Japanese name, but it's not. I think I just figured out what it means." Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. We all gathered around to look at Brenton's pad. He held it up, and this is what it said. "The end of the world as we know it." Judy Douglas, grade 6. I said, we must get that chip. Mr. Murphy, sixth grade teacher. After reading that article, I started becoming obsessed with the treasures of the Grand Canyon. The Phoenix Gazette never ran a follow-up article about that explorer, Kincaid. I couldn't find a word about him anywhere else. What happened to him? How could a story that big end there? At first, I thought that maybe it was just a newspaper hoax, but they ran it on the front page. Kincaid was hired by the Smithsonian Institute, and the story was so long and detailed, it didn't seem likely that somebody would have just made it up. It occurred to me that maybe somebody didn't want the general public to know about this discovery. I mean, when I was a kid, they taught us that North America was settled by Ice Age explorers who came across the Bering Strait from Asia. They became the Native Americans. Nobody crossed the Atlantic or Pacific Oceans to get here in ancient times. That's what all the scientists believed. That's what they told us in school. But what if that was all wrong? What if the ancient Egyptians found a way to get here and they settled in the Grand Canyon? Maybe the scientific community would rather not admit they had it all wrong. Maybe it was a big cover-up. I started thinking that I should go see if I could find the location of the caverns myself. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. We played rock, paper, scissors to decide which one of us would break into Ronnie's house to steal the chip. Judy lost, so naturally she started in whining and saying she couldn't do it. Hey, I didn't blame her. I wouldn't have been able to do it either. In the end, we all agreed that Snick was the only one who had the nerve to break into somebody's house. But the three of us agreed beforehand that if he got caught, we would all say we were in on it. It wouldn't be fair for Snick to take the blame. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. Ronnie's parents worked during the day, and I knew that Ronnie belongs to some geeky computer club that meets after school on Wednesdays. So that seemed like a good time. We all rode over to Ronnie's and parked our bikes a block away. I snuck over to the house and rang the bell. Nobody answered. I tested the doors. They were all locked, but there was a window in the back that opened. The only problem was, the instant I lifted it up, all these bells started ringing and a dog started barking. I slammed the window down and ran out of there. I didn't stop running until I was on my bike and heading home. I don't think anybody saw us. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. As soon as I put the chip inside my computer, it was obvious that it was super powerful. You know how cell phones have a clock in them and they're always right, even if you change time zones? Well, for the heck of it, I used my computer to change the time to 1 minute later. Then I changed it right back. If I wanted to, I could change the time on every cell phone in America. That was how powerful this thing was. I mean, it wasn't just super fast at crunching numbers. It could think. If you told it to do something and it couldn't do it, the chip would try something else. It was like a human brain doing problem solving. It could learn. The possibilities were unlimited. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. I had no choice. We had to get that computer chip back from Ronnie. I walked up to him after school one day and just demanded that he give it to me. I told him I would beat him up unless he gave it to me. It was all bluff, you know. I wasn't about to fight Ronnie, but I didn't know what else to do. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. I figured it was probably Snick who set off the alarm at my house. When he told me he wanted the chip back, I pretended like I didn't know what he was talking about. To tell you the truth, I thought those guys had a lot of nerve, chucking their homework machine into the Grand Canyon and expecting me to just hand the chip over to them. If they wanted it so badly, they shouldn't have thrown it away in the first place. That's what I should have told him. When Snick threatened to beat me up, I told him to lay off, or I'd call the cops and tell them that he was trying to break into my house. That shut him up. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. After New Year's, I never heard from Milner again. I figured he lost interest, or he decided to bother somebody else. Anyway, I was relieved. Judy Douglas, grade 6. After New Year's, Mr. Murphy changed. Everybody noticed it. It seemed like he wasn't that interested in teaching anymore. He would show us videos half the time instead of doing a lesson. He seemed distracted. Mr. Murphy, 6th grade teacher. The Hopi Indians, I learned, tell their children that their ancestors once lived in an underground world inside the Grand Canyon. At some point, they decided to leave, but there was no way out. Their chief caused a tree to grow. And the people climbed out. They sent a message of thanks to the Temple of the Sun, but that messenger never returned. And today in Hopi villages at sundown, the old men of the tribe gaze toward the sun, looking for the messenger. They believe that when he returns, their ancient dwelling place will be returned to them. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. A couple of days after our burglar alarm went off, my cell phone rings, and a guy says his name is Richard Milner, and he wanted to talk to me. Never heard of him. I figured he was some perv. Or maybe he was really the one who tried to break into our house. How he got my number, I'll never know. Anyway, this Milner guy says he wants to meet me and that it had something to do with a computer chip. I asked him how he knew I had the chip, and he told me he intercepted an email from Brenton to Snick. He knew all about the homework machine and that they threw it into the Grand Canyon, so I arranged to meet him at the Canyon View Information Plaza. I figured I could call the cops on my cell phone if there was a problem. Well, I think we spent an hour talking. We hit it off right away. He told me that he started out as a marketing guy who made his living by figuring out what junk teenagers want to buy. DVDs, video games, fashions, software, and other stuff. But gradually he learned that with the power of the computer, he can control people's minds and make them do just about anything for fun and profit. He said he needed a smart kid who knew his way around computers. Brenton turned him down, so he thought I could help him with the tech stuff. He would be the idea man. I liked the guy. I liked the way he operated. We decided to team up and split whatever we earned 50-50. Shook hands on it. The first thing we agreed on was that it would be great to have another chip just like the first one. That would double the power and let us link up two computers in a network. Man, we could control the world if we wanted to. Richard Milner, Personal Diary, 1/22. Oh, January 22nd. Met with Ronnie Teotwaki. Need him to get at Chip and kids. Agreed to work as a team. Booked flight to Tokyo to buy another chip. Mr. Murphy, 6th grade teacher. I rented a kayak one weekend and did a little poking around the Grand Canyon, looking for the site of the ancient caverns. The canyon is enormous, of course. 277 miles along the Colorado River. All I had was the information in the Phoenix Gazette article and a hiker's map. I didn't even bring binoculars. I only had a general idea of where to look. I didn't find anything. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. Mr. Murphy gave us an assignment to write a one-page essay on what we did over the weekend. I wrote a letter to my congressman saying we should put solar panels on every roof in Arizona to generate electricity so we won't have to burn fossil fuels anymore. Then I wrote an essay about how I wrote a letter to my congressman saying we should put solar panels on every roof in Arizona to generate electricity so we won't have to burn fossil fuels anymore. Mr. Murphy, 6th grade teacher. I was collecting their essays when Sam Dawkins raised his hand and asked me what I did over the weekend. So I told the kids I went kayaking in the canyon, and I told them about the article in the Phoenix Gazette. Judy knew about it, of course, because she was the one who found it in the first place. But she had just read the first few paragraphs. She didn't know all the details. I'll tell you one thing I noticed. When I was describing the caverns and treasures, the mummies and everything, everybody was fascinated. But the one who tuned in the most was Ronnie Teotwaki. It was the first time I ever saw that boy pay attention in class. He was staring at me and he was hanging on every word. Chapter 6, February. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. I'm not really a book guy. I figure that if the stuff in libraries was so great, they wouldn't have to give it away for free. You know what I mean? But when Mr. Murphy told us there was an ancient Egyptian treasure hidden in a cave in the Grand Canyon, I went straight to the library after school. I had to look at that article he was telling us about. It wasn't hard to find. The library keeps old issues of the Phoenix Gazette. There it was, right on the front page, April 5th, 1909. It said there were golden statues, weapons, mummies, and all kinds of other stuff hidden in a cave right here in the Grand Canyon. This explorer guy named Kincaid supposedly found all this stuff, but nobody knows what happened to him. It's not in any museum. There's no record of Kincaid taking the stuff out of the canyon. Either it vanished or maybe it was still there. There was no record of what happened to Kincaid either. Man, I sat there and felt the hair on my neck rising up. If this article was for real and the stuff was still sitting there a century later, what was to stop me from getting it? Nothing. Finders keepers. Maybe I could use the cheap GPS I got for Christmas to help me find it. The article was real long. There was a lot of detail about the location of the cave. I made a photocopy of the article so I could go over it real carefully. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. Everybody was buzzing after Mr. Murphy told us about this treasure hidden in the Grand Canyon. I met up with Brenton in the playground after school and told him that I was going to try to find it. He said he would help. Kelsey and Judy came over and asked what we were whispering about. When I told them, they laughed and said we were silly. But when we told them we were serious, they said they wanted in on it too. We all agreed that if we found any treasure, we would donate it to a museum. Judy Douglas, grade 6. The four of us went to the library after school so we could read the Phoenix Gazette article carefully. And guess who was sitting there in the periodicals room? Ronnie Teotwaki. I could hardly believe my eyes. He probably never set foot in a library in his life. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. The four of them walked into the library and saw me sitting there. Judy was all, "What are you doing here?" Like, I'm not allowed in the library, right? I told her it's a public place and I have as much right to be there as she does. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. Ronnie left the library after we came in, but we saw his name on the sheet of paper you have to sign if you want to look at the old newspapers on microfilm. We knew exactly what Ronnie was doing there. He wanted to find out the location of the treasure. Just like us. Judy Douglas, grade 6. We copied the article and I asked the librarian if we could look at some maps of the Grand Canyon. She had a whole bunch of them, some recent ones and some dating back to the 1920s when they were still exploring it. Mr. Murphy wasn't very specific about where the treasure was. Maybe he didn't know himself. Every summer, millions of tourists come here. They usually only go to Grand Canyon Village where the visitor center is, and there are some hotels. But the whole canyon is hundreds of miles along the Colorado River. Even if the secret cavern was as big as Mr. Murphy said it was, locating it would be like finding a needle in a haystack. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. I often wonder if there is a square inch on this planet that has never been stepped on by a human foot. If such a place exists, it would probably be in the Grand Canyon. I've done some hiking in the canyon, and it is just so vast that it would be hard to imagine all of it has been explored. Even today. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. Brenton unrolled this old map and we were looking it over. Judy got a magnifying glass from the librarian so we could read the tiny print. That's when we noticed something. On the north side of the canyon in the area around 94 Mile Creek and Trinity Creek, there were a whole bunch of rock formations with names that sounded Egyptian or Hindu. Tower of Ra, Horus Temple, Osiris Temple, Isis Temple, Cheops Pyramid, the Buddha Cloister, Buddha Temple, Manu Temple, Shiva Temple, stuff like that. Brenton and I turned to each other and whispered, "That's where it is." Mr. Murphy, sixth grade teacher. It didn't occur to me at the time that the kids would get so excited about the idea of a secret treasure in the Grand Canyon. I had come to believe that kids today don't care about stuff like that. They just want to watch TV and go on YouTube. I certainly didn't think they would actually make the effort to try and find a real treasure. It's so much easier to play a video game and find a virtual treasure. It was around President's Day. I remember because I told them to do a research project about the presidents. As usual, Brenton turned in the most interesting paper. I even saved it. How Tall Were the Presidents? By Brenton Damagachi. Below is a list of the presidents, starting with the tallest, Lincoln, and ending with the shrimpy James Madison. 24 presidents were under 6 feet tall, and 18 were 6 feet tall or more. Abraham Lincoln, 6 feet 4 inches. Lyndon B. Johnson, 6 feet 3.5 inches. Bill Clinton, Thomas Jefferson, 6 feet 2.5 inches. Chester A. Arthur, George H. W. Bush, Franklin D. Roosevelt, George Washington, 6 feet 2 inches. Andrew Jackson, Ronald Reagan, 6 feet 1 inches. James Buchanan, Gerald Ford, James Garfield, Warren Harding, John F. Kennedy, James Monroe, William Howard Taft, John Tyler, 6 feet 0 inches, Richard Nixon, 11.5 inches, George W. Bush, Grover Cleveland, Herbert Hoover, Woodrow Wilson, 5 feet 11 inches, Dwight D. Eisenhower, 5 feet 10 inches, 5 feet 10.5 inches, Calvin Coolidge, Andrew Johnson, Franklin Pierce, Theodore Roosevelt, 5 feet 10 inches, Jimmy Carter, Millard Fillmore, Harry S. Truman, 5 feet 9 inches, Rutherford B. Hayes, 5 feet 8.5 inches, William Henry Harrison, James Polk, Zachary Taylor, Ulysses S. Grant, 5 feet 7.75 inches, John Adams, John Quincy Adams, William McKinley, 5 feet 7 inches, Benjamin Harrison, Martin Van Buren, 5 feet 6 inches, James Madison, 5 feet 3.75 inches. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. I was wondering what was taking Milner so long to get back with the second super chip. It was around the end of February when he finally called me on my cell. He was home from Japan. I asked him if he was able to get another super chip, but he shushed me and said we couldn't talk about stuff like that over the phone because somebody might be listening in. I agreed to meet him at the Canyon View Information Plaza. I don't know what the big deal was, because when we met up, all he had to say was that he didn't get another super chip. It wasn't because it was too expensive, it just didn't exist. The one we had was a prototype. We had the only one in the world, and in fact, he told me he was worried that some Japanese gangsters might have followed him home because they wanted the first super chip back. I remember thinking, this guy is paranoid. Anyway, without a second super chip, we wouldn't be able to look up 2 computers in a network and do all kinds of cool stuff with it. It was a good idea, anyway. We got to talking about stuff, and I happened to mention that newspaper article and the treasure of the Grand Canyon. I had the Xerox I made at the library with me, and I showed it to Milner. Well, his eyes lit up like headlights. It was like he forgot about the super chip, and all he wanted to talk about was hiking into the canyon for the treasure. He kept saying, I've got to find it. I've got to find it. I was a little P.O.D., you know. I mean, he didn't know anything about the treasure until I told him about it. If anybody should get it, it should be me. I got him to agree to work as a team. It made sense for me because he was a grown-up and he'd be able to get us a raft and supplies and all the stuff we'd need to go after the treasure. Police Chief Rebecca Fish. Starting around the end of February, every couple of days a few more people would show up at the south entrance gate. They came in buses, cars, some of them hitchhiked. A lot of them used frequent flyer miles. One guy claimed he walked from Alabama. They came from all over. Some of them were runaways. They weren't your usual tourists who want to see the canyon with their own eyes, snap some pictures, buy some souvenirs, and get on home. No, they all said the same thing. The end of the world is coming on Mother's Day. Claim the canyon is gonna open up and the earth will cleave it in half like a busted wiffle ball. They'll be saved. I have no idea where they got them crazy ideas. What a bunch of nuts. Must have been the Twinkies they were all eating. They call themselves canyonists. Put them on a bus and sent them home. Or we tried to, anyhow. After a while, there were too many of them to round up. You'd see these raggedy people wandering around looking for food in garbage cans and so forth. I'll tell you, they were worse than the bears. They would all be babbling about aliens and some prophet named Notnerb. Sometimes you'd see a group of them out in the middle of the field, standing on their heads in a circle. Strangest thing, the Grand Canyon is a place for folks who want to appreciate the beauty and nature. This ain't no place for weirdos. Judy Douglas, grade 6. Snick and Kelsey wanted to rush off and go look for the treasure that afternoon. They were just going to hike down and get it. It was as if they were going to the store to get a loaf of bread. That's the way they do things. Act now and think things through later. So I said to them, "Do you realize we're 7,000 feet above sea level? Do you realize it takes a full day to hike down to the river and another full day to hike back up? Where are we going to get a raft? How are we going to pay for it? And what if there is some fabulous treasure down there? How are we going to carry it back out? You can't just go running off to do crazy stuff. You've got to plan things." Well, folks, that's all the time we have for today. This Young at Heart program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I hope you will join us next time for Young at Heart. If you have any ideas or comments, we'd love to hear from you. I'm Lavender. Thank you for listening.
Audio Journal is supported in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. We are a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
Did you know ADA paratransit riders in Worcester, Auburn, Boylston, Leicester, Northborough, Oxford, Westboro, and West Boylston now have the option to schedule trips through the Worcester Regional Transit Authority's new online reservation system. Call customer service at 508-791-9782 or email paratransit@therta.com to begin scheduling your trip online.
Would you like to hear news from Shrewsbury, Northborough, Southborough, and Westborough that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune in to Audio Journal every Tuesday at 4 p.m.
Hello once again, Audio Journal listeners. I would like to take time to wish all the mothers a very happy Mother's Day from us to you and to all. Happy Mother's Day from all of us at Audio Journal, part of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.